Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do shit.
Well, and welcome back to Sykes and Jacks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 15. NASDAQ futures down 65. So we're giving a little bit of yesterday's gain up as a way of review. Yesterday, we were up 24 and the S&P down up 141 in the NASDAQ as we gained back some of what we lost on last Friday. So we had 2 days in a row of the up, and now we're sneaking the other day. Wait, we'll see if this rally fails or if we continue to come back from last week's big losses. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning.
How are you? I dozed during the last just little bit of the debate and woke up just in time to see the Cubs win.
Oh, well, that's pretty good timing.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, I made it through almost 30 minutes of the debate, and then I just said I can't take it any longer, and I turned it off.
Well, when they got into the thing about...
There was the deadliest catch was on.
When they went off on the part about the Venezuelans boiling people's dogs, I'm like, they're not really doing this, are they? But they did. It's one of those things, I guess. I don't know. It was. I thought the way they did it was halfway decent. The questions and so forth. I mean, it was. I don't know if they ever had one without an audience before. I guess there was no audience for the original Kennedy Nixon, was there?
No, and there wasn't an audience for the Biden Trump one either. I suppose it was okay. I really don't like the moderators jumping in and trying to fact check people and challenge them. I think that's up to the candidates to do or not do, especially when the moderators really did 5 fact checks on Trump in line and 0 on Harris, who, lied just as much. So, that I think is bad form, and I really wish they would just shut up and let the candidates talk.
I think there's
questions up, but that's it.
I think at some point you can say the moon is further away than Mars, and somebody has to say, no, it's not.
Yeah, but that would be the other candidate could say, what are you talking about? They do it for everything else that they do. They you don't need the assist. Can you imagine a real debate, like a high school debate competition or something, and the debate moderator jumps in the middle of it? It's not going to happen.
Well... Yeah, I don't know what the...
And yet, yet they feel compelled to do it in this format. I think they should just leave it alone.
When I saw the Trump-Biden debate, I mean, being in the middle on this, I, of course, have a different view than people on either side.
You're not in the middle, Tom. You're in between.
Same thing, yeah.
So, no, not exactly.
I'm the white in the Oreo.
No, politically, you're not in the middle.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what.
But you are in between parties.
After last night's performance, I'm sitting there. I almost said a prayer. Can you get me a moderate Republican in the next 55 days that I could vote for, instead of this lunatic or this lady that I think is probably not dumb or anything, but she's just maybe a few years away. I don't. Trump last night. Everybody worried about
her 50s. If she isn't ready now, she's not going to.
I think I would be more ready now than in my 50s. Maybe not physically, but mentally for sure. Anyway, but with the Biden fiasco, the flip side of that coin was Trump was almost as bad, and he looked terrible again last night.
I think he looked angry last night, and it didn't come off well.
Yeah, it's something.
What's interesting is he can be very funny. He can be pretty funny, and yet he doesn't show that you know, that kind of humor in the debate format, and I think it would have served him well.
I have been forced to listen to him a little bit lately, and 2 weeks ago he was at one of these rallies and he launched into a 20-minute diatribe on Hillary. Is she even alive anymore? What does that got to do with anything?
She's active. She's out there as a spokesperson for the.
There is no idea. It comes off like this angry something with virtually no vision whatsoever on anything.
I agree with you. And you know, he also drives me nuts because of things that he just does. He gets these batting practice fastballs. As an example, it's real easy. Every time that Harris says tax cuts for billionaires, all he really has to do is say, you know, wait a minute. We doubled the personal exemption, which helps every single taxpayer, but it especially is helpful for people on the low end of the income tax filing spectrum, and it applies to everybody whether they itemize deductions or not. Meanwhile, we put a cap on the state and local tax deduction, and who pays the highest amount of state and local taxes? Rich people. And you, Senator Harris, when you were a senator, voted against it. That's a lob. She just lobbed that in for him, and all he has to do is go right to what the fact of the matter is. And, you know, even if you don't like what he did with corporations and so on, but you just hit back on those two things and say, you voted against that. Did you even read it? This is easy stuff for him, and
He's totally unprepared. He didn't read it either.
Oh, I think he knew because he talked about it at the time.
You know,
he's not a nimble debater.
I don't think he... Kevin, if he was in your office, he'd be the most unprepared person in your office. I don't think he reads anything. I mean, what was the one that Carl was talking about last week? First of all, I don't know if Obama essentially had the executive order banning us giving money for this gain thing that ended up being COVID.
Gain of function. Yeah.
Gain of function. And he came in his haste to get rid of everything that Obama did. I don't think they say I'm a stack of stuff. You know, he reminded me when he was on TV showing people how he was signing these executive orders. He reminded me of the guy in MASH where Radar wouldn't let him look at what he was signing. I mean, I don't know what the world is today. Well, I guess I do know what the world is today a little bit. But you compare these people with people who would absolutely prepare for anything. I mean, guys like Churchill, guys like Bill Stevenson. Kennedy, how he managed to do it with a bad back, messing around with women all day long. Said every time some guy went through all the old tapes and said, whatever the subject was, 5 minutes into it, whether it was oil companies, whether it was other people, whatever it was, 5 minutes into the thing, it was obvious he was more prepared than the people he was talking to. You know, the guy read 5 newspapers while he was having his coffee in the morning, allegedly from end to end. Remember where we in grammar school, all of us took speed reading because we wanted to be like the president? You think this guy even knows what speed reading is? Or her? I mean, we've dumbed down the whole thing, I think, and it makes me really nervous.
Yeah, have you ever read how his day goes?
I read once that he had no computer on his desk, 15 magazines, 12 of which had his picture on the front cover.
That's not the story. What he does is the guy's up really, really early every morning, and so you know he does a whole lot of cable news, which I would say is not healthy. But he watches them all. He watches all sides of it. As soon as you get to time to start ringing the phone, he spends until like 10:30 or 11 on the phone with people doing work related stuff. So whether it's calling senators, Congress people, whether it's getting with his cabinet people, the people in the government when he was the president, I don't know who he calls now, but he refers to that as executive time, and he's been operating that way since forever, back in his company days. And so he just spends a lot of time talking to people. And then somewhere around 10:30 or 11, his official day starts, and that's when he starts meeting people. So, he's got a different information pipeline other than reading, but there is an information pipeline there. Whether it's a good one or not, because I don't know who he calls. I don't know who he's on the phone with all the time.
Well, it's weird to me that his new biggest, bestest advisor is now Elon Musk.
Yeah, I think that's overstating the case.
Well, maybe.
I think he made friends with Elon Musk when he did that interview.
Well, whatever. Anyway, Elon Musk is a pretty brilliant guy. He does a lot of stuff, but I also know that his company, if it wasn't for that bill, I don't think his company would even be in business if they didn't get all that money from other people all those years, did they? Anyway.
Yeah, it might not be. On the other hand, what he's done with SpaceX is, again, that relies on government largesse, but there's, a lot more innovation there than we're getting out of NASA lately. And I will say this about Musk. Everybody said that when he bought Twitter and got rid of, more than half of the staff, they said, well, how are they going to operate? And they have, because he, was pretty good at recognizing the bloat and saying, let's get rid of it. So, I can respect that. A lot of people in the business world get faced with that choice, and it's really hard to pull off. So, I have very mixed feelings with Musk.
Well, I will say this about Kamala Harris in terms of the policies. Now, as a much more of a capitalist than people give me credit for, which is really, really stupid, actually, because anybody who trades on a trading floor for 20 years is about as capitalist as it gets. I think you've picked up on this, Kevin. In fact, I know you have. You look at what's happening in the world today and how the money is all flying to one place, the rich people. Now, who designed that? I think it's both parties, I'm not going to blame them, Republicans, because I think they've done just as well under the Democrats, maybe even better. But somehow or another, they've gained control of the government. And the disparity in wealth is something we've never seen unless maybe 1929. And I don't want to see that happen again. Now, I was on the way in this morning. They just did some big study on, who's the 25-year-olds now? What are you, Andrew? What's your generation?
I'm pretty sure it's Gen Z.
Yeah. And then whatever you guys are, girls, they did some big survey on these guys.
We'll just call them the slackers. How's that, Andrew?
But that actually would probably work. No, but and this is the new Andrew, though.
That's what they called us, so.
You know what, though? I'll tell you what. When Andrew first showed up, he might have been in that group, but now all of a sudden the guy's a manager at his place. He's doing good. I never thought I'd see today, but all of a sudden, he's all okay.
Right.
Maybe I think it's our influence, Kevin. I'll go with that. How does that sound?
Yeah, let's go with that, yeah.
Anyway.
Andrew, you keep hanging out with me. I'll get you on the right track.
Without a doubt.
Sounds good.
At least we'll try. Now, I don't know what we do with Matt Byrne, but
that guy's fired.
He's fired. We got to fire his ass. The big poll, or whatever they do, comes out this morning, and most Gen Zers don't think they're ever going to have any kids. They don't think they're ever going to own a home because the prices have gone absolutely out of their range, and there's no way they see them making the $1 million to send four kids through college or wherever it's going to be at there's been this massive mix here or screw up on somebody's part, inflation and everything, and I think Harris, unlike maybe Trump, does see that. And when you see that, when you see all these new things they're proposing, $50,000 for small industry, well, obviously you can't start a small industry now. Everybody doesn't want you there. Other people will suck you up. I can't imagine you putting together a small hardware store now or something, for God's sake. I mean, it has become so over. You can't get near it. You can't even be a doctor anymore unless you get sucked up by some group. What we've done to our society in the last decade or two decades, Kevin, you and I will agree on this. We should never agree on radio. But we'll agree that it is really, really screwed up in terms of who can afford what. And some people have so much money, they don't know what to do with it. The lady with the, because of the tax laws and the basis pickup, you never have to pay taxes on You know, if your dad gives you a stack or something like that. She had $2 billion. You know what to do with it? She gave it to Mark Cuban. Who the hell has $2 billion you know what to do with? I mean, it is absolutely incredible the difference between the people who have and have not. And I'm in the money management business, so I got a pretty good idea how people are doing and where and where they got the money from. And I'm just saying, Kevin, now all these programs, you sit there and go, wait a minute. It's not the government's job to give somebody a how many $1,000 tax deduction if they buy a house or if they start a small business that, geez, we got to figure out a way to get them 50 grand out of taxes or something. I sit there and go, this isn't the right way. But it is a way. It's at least a recognition of how difficult it is to do that today. It's impossible between the regulations, between I can't imagine starting a small brokerage firm today and getting that one by FINRA. Just five people showing up and starting up a brokerage firm. They would be on you like white on rice. And they want no part of you, a small firm. Now, she's probably not smart enough to realize that the regulations are part of this and cut that out of it. I mean, doesn't that's not where she comes from. But the fact is...
Yeah, because what she's not acknowledging is... I mean, she sounds very empathetic, but what she's not acknowledging is her own personal role in that. I can live with a candidate coming in and saying, you know, there was a wrong track and I was part of this. At some point you got to say, not just, oh, you know, my values are the same, even though my position has changed. Now, you got to explain your change, your metamorphosis, and say, here's where I'm going to go starting in the future. And it would be nice if people could actually believe that you would. But you go back to what Bernie Sanders said on Sunday, on one of the Sunday shows. He said, well, she's just doing what she has to do to get elected.
Well, which is the same thing he would do.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm not sure. I don't know if Bernie's
he did not add. You know, his issues, he didn't know how to add.
You know, he does not even know how to add. Plus, you know, the way he personally lives and the way he describes the world are very, very different.
Well, let me ask you this simple question. I'm going to ask the same thing with Russell when he comes in. I think through the show, through the people here, through the fact that we've got some pretty smart people here, we have a bubble in houses that went from an average price of $280 or something to $400 during COVID. All right. I mean, well, during the money supply mess, COVID, and afterward. And it was well on its way before. This has happened since 2000. That's kind of the watershed when it started. It got a lot worse in 2008. We've had exactly 24 years of presidents, well, 23 and a half, 12 of which have been Republican, 12 have been Democrat. So the idea that somehow this is a last 3.5 year phenomenon is categorically ignorant. It's been, I guess you could say it started with Bush putting a war on a credit card or something, but actually we started in 68, then it toned down for a while. So now we have a situation where, guess what? You know, zounds, Mortimer, regular people can't afford a house now. Now you can do it one of two ways. You can bankrupt the government to give people money to do it in some bizarre series of programs where half the money gets grabbed by people in the meantime, which I don't want to see, you know that. Or you can say, look, the problem is this house is $400,000, it ought to be $300,000. Why did it get to be $400,000? Well, we poured a bunch of money into the system, and a few people got it, and the rest of the people didn't. Well, now what if we pull it out of the system gradually, or hope people catch up with income, and somehow 5 years from now we've bridged this gap to a large degree. Nobody wants that to happen, that anybody's stock might actually go down or anybody's house might actually go down in price, because both parties work for the rich people. The people who own the house currently and own the stock have way more power than the people she's talking about trying to help. I mean, did I just describe the problem in a nutshell?
Yeah, I think so. I think so in many ways. The one thing I will say is that we know we have a deficit problem, and we get this with every administration that comes in. Everybody knows it, and they know that this is a problem and that we're ringing up too much debt. But But you come in, you come on board, and you say, I have an agenda. Yeehaw, let's go. And so it's spend. Now, we also spent a lot of money because we shut down the economy. Okay, let's suppose, and I don't believe this for a second, but I'll run with the idea. Let's say shutting down the economy was the right thing to do because it saved lives. Now, I would say, you know, I have people who will argue with me and say, yes, it was the right thing to do. Look how many people died. We had to do something. And I always say, when you say that many 100,000 people died, that tells me it didn't work, not that it did. So, okay, let's set that aside, say it was the thing to do. Trump was behind that, too. So, I haven't gotten past that. But, okay, now we have to spend money to support it. Our problem is, okay, let's say we have to emergency spend. We can't afford to emergency spend because of the irresponsibility of all the prior years. But we do it anyway. And now we get the new administration who comes in and says, yeehaw, let's do our agenda. And that just piles on top of it. And this is where we are now. This is why we've crossed the Rubicon in terms of how much, you know, the debt service is compared to some of the other big ticket items in the budget. So it's, you know, it's a snowball of things, and it's based on really, really bad decisions by the government and then we piled on top of it. And that's just horrible policy. And now this is why people can't afford homes. This is why, you know, starter homes are out the window. And in the meantime, how much wealth did we transfer to the top of the and it's not just, you know, Pfizer wealth or Moderna wealth and that. It's wealth of landowners, because we told landlords they couldn't collect rent, and so a lot of small landlords had no cash flow. You got negative cash flow, you sell the property. So we transferred that wealth to corporate landlords as well. And so all of this going on is just, you could see, you and I and everybody who comes on this show could see it happening in real time.
Oh, yeah.
Knew how wrong it was, and, you know, and it still happened. Do you think the people who were responsible for those decisions couldn't see the same thing?
Sure they did. Sure they did. And that's the cornerstone of the discussion I have with my bro. And, you know, my bro is the smartest man I've ever met. Does a great job with everybody here at PTI. CPA, got his master's degree. He's still of the ilk, and I think a lot of people are, that the people that make these, I'll use the term, policy mistakes in the long run, somehow are just trying to do the best they possibly can and just oop it up, you know, screw it up. I, after being around enough times and seeing every single time somebody makes one of these decisions, a certain group of people wins and a certain group of people loses, I can't do that, Kevin. I don't think these people are that stupid. I think they're pretty darn smart, and I think they know exactly where it's going. You can't tell me. I mean, I know I'm a crazed monetarist because I actually sat there with Milton Friedman, and I'll never change in that regard. And the more, you know, the more I read, the more I know he was right, and me following him is right. But I'll tell you what, there's the thought that 40 years after the great disaster of the 70s and 80s of inflation, and how many, but then again, Kevin, it wasn't really a disaster for all, was it? It was a big winner for some. Now, same thing happened. I would never believed. By the way, you're absolutely correct, and I'm not supposed to say that. That the screw up with the COVID stuff was we had an emergency situation. Now, whether we should have shut down for 2 weeks, I probably would have agreed with that. But once it was obvious that wasn't working, I don't know why I would have jumped on a political bandwagon and stayed that way. I think I would have. I surely wouldn't have shut down a restaurant when the Sam's Club across the street is selling hot dogs. I mean, I think that was stone cold ignorant, and still do. Anyway, the idea that we had nothing in reserve, like you say, through good times and in bad. We've had some good times. We still are broke. We're borrowing money. And we're borrowing more and more money from other people, not just ourselves, which is another problem, even though that's come down a little bit. And now you've got three ways. Okay, we got to pony up all this money for COVID, for people, for whatever. Now we can do one of two things. Well, we could, one of three things. Well, we can tax for it. Wait a minute. The people who put me in office just had me rammed through a tax decrease. Whether it filtered through all the people or not, that's a debate for another day. The fact is, we just had a tax decrease. Now, you could say, well, for the people that are still doing okay and still have the garbage truck company that is not having a problem, we're going to have a 10% tax surcharge this year, or 20 or something, because we are in a crisis mode. Not saying how popular that would have been, Kevin, probably not very. But that would have been one way to do it, all right? The other would be, let's just borrow more money, okay? Well, that is a little bit of a problem when a lot of the people aren't working. And the third is, screw it, let's just print it. And let's print 40% more dough and hand it out there like if it's real money, without regard to anybody who might have cash or regular dough somewhere. Because, oh, by the way, we're only paying 0.5% in the bank. And we decided to do that instead, without any, not acknowledging any of the repercussions and saying, well, listen, we better do this as minimum as we can. We'll make people feel good for a while, but we can't be doing 40%. Let's find a way to do it with 15%. That's what we did in the Civil War or something. I mean, that's a manageable number that we can draw down when it's over. They didn't think anything like that, Kevin. Let's 18 months, 40% money into an economy that's not growing, it's going down. These people are not that stupid. Nobody.
Well, so the question, Tom, is what's the end game? And what I'll do, and I know we got to go to break. Jeez,
we're blowing through break.
Skip the break.
We're skipping break. Yeah, wait a minute. Cubs won.
Cubs won. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
It's the end game, and really all you got to do is pick up a copy. In fact, I'll send you one. I'll send you one for you. I'll send you one for Dan, so that he can read it too. Pick up a copy of Klaus Schwab's The Great Reset. It's out front. It's not hidden. That's the end game. And how many people, who are the most influential people in the world, and do they not convene on the World Economic Forum every year in Davos?
Yeah.
This is who's driving the bus here. And the description of the end game that's in this book is where they're trying to go.
But the only
and it is not a very free society.
The only problem with the only issue with that, and if I was debating them, there was a guy who wrote an article once. It sounded so dumb, Kevin, that when I was done with it, I was thinking, this guy's pretty smart. It's probably true. It had to do with how, left to their own devices, manipulating governments and so forth, 5% of the people are going to steal everybody else's money. And if you don't find a way to get it back to them, because there's a certain energy involved in that, if you don't find a way to get it back to them, so the next group steals it again, you can't just let their kids be rich for the rest, well, for their lives, for generational life, like the nobles. And that's what we're having now. The people that have nothing but money are the trust fund babies.
Yeah, and it used to be that different groups would move into and out of the wealthiest category. Now, so as people would age out of it, and another group would move in and replace them.
And their kids would piss it away,
yes,
too.
Yes, you always had your generational wealth, people, but it wasn't like it is now. And so that's one of the big differences as well, is who's controlling the money is also who's going to continue to control the money.
Well, answer me this. Two things I think that would solve a lot of the tax issues. Now, it doesn't mean we're gonna have nothing but money this year. Matter of fact, I'm looking right at this thing. Even with our inflated-ass economy, Kevin, and supposedly how well we're doing, fiscal 2023, at $4.4 trillion in receipts, 24, now with 2 months to go, we have we have 4,064. So we're going to be maybe 5% higher in tax receipts this year than last year. If we're doing as good as these people say we're doing, how the hell can that be? Why isn't it way more than that? With the stocks being up there?
Well, none of the math works, and we know that. I mean, we got one of the best math guys around in Carl, so he comes on and he tells us exactly why the math doesn't work.
Well, but just on simple tax policies, these are two things that I think are so goddamn simple I can't even get on the road. Corporations should pay as much as other people, as the Supreme Court says they're people. Well, I don't know if I'd buy that, but they should never have to pay twice. The company pays, and if they pay a dividend, that person has to pay. That's what causes people like Warren Buffett to amass zillions of dollars. That's what causes Microsoft to never pay a dividend or pay a little bit of a dividend, that kind of crap. So up the taxes for a corporation to 32% or whatever it is for regular people. And, oh, by the way, if you send out a dividend, you deduct it. It comes right off of income. And whoever is on the other end, if he's penniless, he pays 10%. If he's got dough, he pays 35% or whatever. That is so simple that the reason why we can't do it is because these guys want a reason to keep the cash and not give it out to the shareholders and become these megalo whatever guys, which is nuts. The other thing is on his capital gain, where you know, if your dad bought IBM at $1 and he can give it to you if he croaks at 205, nobody pays a tax. Well, I don't think that if it's 40 years ago the guy bought it, that the capital gains tax should be the same for 40 years ago as it is if it was a year ago. That to me is asinine. So I would raise the capital gains tax from 20 to maybe 25%, but then I was all maybe even 28, but then I would index it. So if you bought something, and I think I just did the math here, if you bought something in 2000 and you sold it today, if you bought it for $10 and you sold it for $100, the CPI is up four times in that 24 years, I think. All right, so the $10 that you bought it for now becomes $40. It's worth four times that. Well, that'll be $50, right? The inflation be, and now you pay 28% on the 50 from the 100, not the 10 from the 100, because there needs to be some difference in a capital gain on something you bought 40 years ago over something you bought 13 months ago, I would think. And I got that from Rostenkowski when he was alive, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. Those two things would put a lot more intelligence into the tax thing, I would think. And why can't we do something that simple? Because people don't want to. For some, they want to have the excuse to say, "Oh no, I'm never paying a dividend." They want that stuff. That's insane, Kevin. All it does is these people do nothing but pay themselves back. The idea of buying stock back in the open market rather than just paying people a dividend is so screwed up to me. I can't even go there. And yet, people look at me like I got five heads. What do you mean? That's what companies do now. Okay. Why?
Well, it is what they do. Yeah. The question is, is why? So, look, ownership, you might as well have a bond, because all you're doing is loaning money. Stock ownership is just a loan to the company.
Well, that's another, which is
fine if you understand what you're getting into.
Well, that's another issue. And I'm talking about, these are serious tax issues that we talked about, God's sake, when I was in grad school. If somebody, I'll run this one by. I don't know how we get into the tax stuff here, but tax theory. But if you and I are running an electric
store, since I'm not any good at it, but go ahead.
Right, but if you and I are running an electric store or electric contractor business, and all of a sudden, you know, we're gonna build. Oh God, we're gonna build a new stadium. We get the contract to do some of the electric work, and in the contract is something stupid like, we have to finance the whole thing for what we're doing. In other words, they're not just going to pay us for our work. We got to go buy the stuff, you know, put it in. In other words, if our job is $10 million worth and $8 million of it is us buying stuff and putting it in there and then paying us
materials
instead of us giving us the $8 and paying us the $2 for what we're doing. If they go stupid the other way, and you and I have to go to a bank and say, look, we got this contract, we've been in business some, and the bank loans us the $8 million, in my mind, there's no question that is a cost of doing business and should be deductible. Okay? But now, if you and I say, well, we're going to be in this business 50 years, we could put $50 million in as capital, or we could put $30 million in his capital and borrow the rest for long term. So it is essentially same long term financing as the stock. Well, right now, under my theory, the dividends would become deductible just like the interest, because it's really the same thing, right? Long term financing to me is not a cost of business in the same way it's a cost of capital. There's a difference. Now, what my, whether one would be 5 years or 10 years or whatever my cutoff would be, I don't know. But there is a difference, I believe, don't you?
I would think so.
Yeah, tax. The idea that, why do you think these companies are so highly leveraged? They get to deduct one and not the dividends. That's insanity. You think Bob would agree with me?
Yeah, I'm not gonna argue with you, Tom. I mean, tax policy is not my strength. Other than,
but this is comments. I just
rant, my usual rant that it's all in the code anyway.
But I mean, I just lobbed out three things.
It's all in what you can charge off in expense, so you get exactly what the tax code tells you to do.
But I mean, those three things are simple, and yet it would really change how people operated. I mean, I think people own companies ought to get a dividend. Shouldn't you just go to executive bonuses and to buy stock back? People say if you buy stock back, you return money to shareholders. It sounds to me like you return money to the guy who doesn't want to be a shareholder anymore.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
It does. It does. Although they will say things like, well, we're just investing in ourselves.
All right, I'm going to ask you one more question, then we're going to talk about the Cubs. There's the two people they're debating last night, and now we're talking about stuff that seems to happen no matter who's president. Who and where is the man behind the curtain? Is it in Davos? Maybe it is.
Well, I think it's out of that group. But I would say at the moment, I believe it's Barack Obama. And he always said that. He, you know, when they said, would you love to have more of a term? His response always has been, you know, I'd love it if I didn't have to work every day, if I could just call the shots and have people do it for me.
He could have been one of our laziest presidents, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, could have been. So anyway, yeah, the Cubs. How about it?
Why are they all of a sudden so much better on the road? Is the team designed better for other parts?
You know, sometimes it gets into your head. You know how it is in sports. If you think it matters, it matters. So
yeah,
you know, it you just get that whole mindset. So that I'm sure that's part of it. Part of it is, you know, they're not built for their ballpark very well. I don't know. Whatever it is, they're down to four games. They're still in that position where they're not quite out of it, not quite in it yet. They'd have to get just a little bit tighter. But you know what? They're just wrapping up a series with the Yankees and the Dodgers, two of the best teams in baseball. And they're going to walk out of that no worse than 500, and they might wind up being 4 out of 6. That's a pretty good little run for them.
Well, the pitching has certainly changed.
At the right time, although the right time to start doing this would have been about 3 weeks sooner than they did.
Well, I think their issue is the teams they're chasing are pretty good. I mean, Atlanta was, 9-1 in their last 10 games?
Yeah,
how do you catch that?
They've also lost ground to the Cubs, so they, you know, they're not playing their best baseball right now.
Well, I think the last 10 games, Atlanta was 9-1, weren't they?
I can tell you. Give me a sec.
I think they were pretty close to that. Or maybe, well, they lost last night, so they wouldn't be 9-1 anymore. But, they, you know, it's I thought for a while the team they might sneakily catch was San Diego, but now they put on a charge.
Yeah, they're not. I don't think they're going to get them. It's either the Mets or it's the Mets, Yankees, or excuse me, the Mets, Braves. Or bust.
I mean, my 3 weeks ago, I thought they might catch the San Diego because they were kind of tailspinning.
Yeah, the Braves are now 5-5 out of their last 10. The Mets are the ones that are
hot.
Well,
if they can somehow win tonight, then they got a couple of. Then they got Oakland. Of course, playing a crummy team at home hasn't been their best forte.
Although the last homestand they did well, so yeah, they've got the Nationals again. They got Oakland, you know, so they have a chance. If they look, let's put it this way: if they don't keep the charge going against the bad teams, it's their own fault.
Well, then the last series of the year, which would be a real interesting one if they were like a game away, is the Phillies would already have clinched. Who the Phillies going to play that weekend? You know, are they gonna rest all their good pitchers and all that other kind of stuff? And that, you know, who knows?
It's a good question. The Phillies, what the Phillies will do is they'll look out for the Phillies first. They're not going to be looking out for the Braves or the Mets. There used to be this mindset that you have to make an honest game. You have to make an honest effort because that's the right thing to do for the teams in contention. And I don't think that's anywhere close to that now. I think they're absolutely willing to look out for themselves first and foremost. And if it happens to coincide with anybody else, good for them.
Yeah, I mean it's, and then all that gets you is a one game play in, right? The last spot. And then the next series would be 2 out of 3 at the other person's park. So the first 4 games, you don't even get a home game. You got to come out of that one into a 4 out of 7 series, and then finally you get a home game, right?
Yeah, I'd have to go look it up again, Tom. I'm not sure what the playoff schedule looks like.
I think that's it. I think you go to the first wild card series is 2 out of 3 in somebody else's park. And they're not, if you're the last guy in, you're not going to get any home field advantage anywhere.
All right, so you made me do it. Well, let's look up the schedule here. Can I get just the playoff schedule? MLB playoff.
I've had some interesting conversations while you're talking about that without detracting you. It's some interesting conversations with people regarding what the motivation might be with a school that has paid somebody all this money and they're not playing so well. You know, it could totally screw up. I mean, it happens, obviously, in the pros. You know, I mean, it happens at all levels. We're watching something fascinating this NIL. I know what I want to ask you. Well, 2 things I want to ask you. Today is a 9/11 anniversary. We can't go the whole hour without mentioning that. That was quite a day, huh?
How do you remember it?
I was I just come into the office, and I was a little bit of a different brand of cat in this because I had been to the World Trade Center several times, and in my normal curiosity, the walls in the place were totally different than any other building you've ever seen. If you went to the edge, it's a lot like the AN building here, the old Standard Oil building. The outside skin is, the beams are much closer together than you would normally see. The reason for that is in the inside, other than the elevator structure in the middle, there was no internal beams. So when you went to the edge, between the beams, you could actually look down there. It was really creepy. One of the guys from Smith Barney wouldn't go near the wall because you could almost see where the floor ended and then like space extended further to where the outside skin was because the floor was attached all these individual girders or pylons going up, and when the plane hit and they started and the fire started, I'm sitting there going, and I'm not, you know, I learned from a lot of guys at Pullman, so I know a little bit more about engineering stress than the man on the street, but not very much. And I'm sitting there going, Dr. J was in the room. I go, Jen, if they don't find a way from the other tower or from a helicopter or something to get some water on this, these towers are going down. And he goes, why do you think you know everything? I said, Jan, I don't know everything. I know I don't know beans about everything. But I know if one of those floors collapses, the whole place is going down. Because the next floor can't withstand the weight of the floor above it.
I can bear the weight, yeah.
And when they went all that period of time, I can't believe, honestly, Kevin, it's easy to criticize. And I know how brave the fire people were to go up the steps, and some of those guys died and everything. And I don't know how somebody at some point, they stopped putting water at the top of these skyscrapers. If you look around Chicago, even now, you'll see all these tanks on top of these buildings. The idea was if there was a fire, you needed water up top because you couldn't get it up there. And I think some of the original skyscrapers that were built had internal water tanks. There seemed to be no way of, from either from like the 50th floor of one of the towers to firing up to the 65th floor of the other tower. No, there was no sort of emergency thinking of what if a fire got out of control on the 80th floor, how the hell do we get water to it? Now, you have your sprinkler system, but that got blown out by the plane, right? So that's a problem. Now, whether how redundant that was, because a few of the walls were still intact, whether there was a sprinkler system pipe on all four walls or just one, I don't know. My guess is it might have just been on one. Now, if you had to redo a building like that today, you might have as many as eight pipes all on different feeds going up in case something like that happened. Like, whatever it was, some combination of design and lack of forethought in terms of what could possibly happen with even like a regular fire or something. Plus, the thing's tall enough, a plane could have flown into it by accident in a fog or something, not the way they did it, but so...
Not an airliner, but perhaps a private plane.
Well, a plane did blow into the Empire State Building, but the way it was built just blew up one section. So, I mean, when you do these things, everything you do, you got to have some sort of a thought process of like, you know, I've had some new clients lately, virtually all of them, Kevin, have concentration issues, which means they got a whole lot of money in one stock. Maybe there's tax issues that they don't want to sell it, whatever it is, their dad gave it to them. Now it's a significant part of their wealth. You've got to go through the list of what we can do to help. If we do this, what happens? If we do this, what could happen? If we do this, how much does it cost? I don't get why there was no plan whatsoever to get water up there. The plane just happened to blow into the side that had all the sprinkler pipes.
Yeah, it's like they didn't do any good risk assessment on it. And risk assessment is a very, very structured, tedious process that is really important.
And it costs. Why would anybody say, if you and I were walked into a meeting and said, we think there's one in a million chance that somebody should fly a plane in this thing on purpose or otherwise, so we would like to have four redundant sprinkler systems with pipes on all four sides of the building, I think we'd have been thrown out of the room. I can't imagine what the cost of that be. But now looking back on it, it was cheap, right? And I can't get over. I know the one of the ladies, I think she was a listener with Jan and I on the air from Ohio. Her brother was doing a sales call there. One of the guys who was the former vice chairman of the CBOE. That was the guy's name. I knew him because he used to hang out at the First Stop office. He was there visiting the people at Cantor Fitzgerald. What, they have the top few floors and all their people died? I mean, it was, you know, it really, really horrible thing. I mean, the fact that out of all the people in the towers, the loss was on paper seemingly not as bad as it could have been. You know, it was an absolute unsung hero, Kevin. If anybody was ever, have we ever been to the World Trade Center?
No.
Yes, no?
No.
Well, the towers were one thing, but whoever designed them, there was this huge plaza, but unless it was a dead calm day, you almost couldn't walk outside because the wind came off of those towers down to blow your toupee off if you had one. So the underside of that had like three or four subways coming in and the path from Jersey. The basement, the underground was a city, an absolute city, with probably 25 restaurants. If you forgot your belt, there was a belt store. If you forgot your tie, there were four tie stores. All you had to do is walk down the steps from whatever street that is, and you'd say, there are thousands of people down there walking back and forth from the different trains and everything and heading for the elevators for World Trade Center. Absolutely was an anthill city. And when this thing first happened, the guy who runs all the subways, without even being told, thought something was wrong, and he shut off every train going into the down part of the building. So nobody else could get there below, because people would get there below, not above. He didn't walk into the place. And that guy, whoever he was, or if he's dead, if he's in heaven, he better hope he's in heaven, because he'd save so many friggin' lives by just making sure nothing came close to the place in terms of subways and path trains and stuff. I mean, there were a lot of massive, massive heroes that day that did stuff, you know, they never thought they would be called upon to do, and then they did. I mean, and then there are people who stole stuff. You know, there's always that part of humanity, right? I mean, there was a fire truck that was throwing blue jeans in the front of the fire truck. I mean, but that's 1% of the people. The rest of the people, you know, any kind of crisis, it's amazing how people respond, I think. You know, that's my
way. I agree with you, Tom. I think it is, too. So, you know, Bob Golden and I had gone to the Notre Dame-Nebraska football game that week, the previous weekend. And some fans up the row got into a scuffle, and one guy shoved the other, and the whole row, we were standing, and it was kind of like dominoes, you know, stumbling down the way. Now, we didn't all fall, but I was on the end. And I did trip because the stadium in Nebraska has these concrete steps down, and they're half steps for every row. So, when my foot moved, it caught on the steps. I fell. I landed and took the bleacher seat on the other side of the aisle square into the back.
Ugh.
So I was pretty damn sore. So we get to Monday morning, and I called in, told my boss that I was going to try and get in and see an orthopedic surgeon because I was still having problems with my back, and it was still a lot of pain, and I better get somebody to look at it. Well, okay, so I'm home. I'm getting on the phone trying to call somebody to see if I can get an appointment today. Call my regular doctor, say, can you get me in someplace? Having all those kinds of conversations. And my phone rings, and it's the president of the bank calling me up. And he immediately launches into, Fiserv, who's our big data services provider, they're locked down. They've got everything on lockdown, and this is going on. Here's what's going on. Said, wait a minute, what are you talking about? And he says, you don't know what I'm talking about? And I said, no. And he said, turn on your TV. Well, I turned on my TV, and that was right as the second plane was flying into it. And that was when I said, because I was responsible for disaster recovery at the bank, that was when I said, well, so much for the seeing the doctor today. I'll be in about 20 minutes. And so I just spent the rest of the day, basically monitoring situation, coordinating some of the responses that we had to do. That's how I remember the day. It all started, cascading and falling into place the way it did because of what happened over the weekend. Fortunately, we flew back on Sunday, so we didn't get stuck, like in Lincoln, Nebraska, which would have been not so hot.
Yeah, because they closed the no airplanes for what, 2 days or something? Or?
No, it was no airplanes for the better part of a week. The other effect of that, the thing that happened is, at the time, checks cleared, paper checks were how commerce was done, and checks were getting flown around the United States to clear. So if if I was in California and I wrote a check to Tom Howe and you deposited that bank, you got credit for it that week. You'd get your 1 day float or 2 day float, whatever they were assigning at the time to that check. But it wasn't going anywhere because we weren't flying checks, along with people. We weren't flying any checks or any cargo of any kind, any air freight at all. So as a result, we were double counting the balances. The money supply number just shot up like crazy. The Fed kind of freaked over that, saying we have no idea what it really is. So as a result, they passed the what is the shorthand referred to as Check 21, the legislation that started forcing the issue with clearing checks by image, and that's the way we do business today. Is everything is using image technology and file transmissions.
Well, I assume Russell's with us and listening, so you can certainly pile in. I got one more little rant though about. I guess I try and tie stuff together, which I shouldn't. But when I was after that, right after 9/11, there was some huge bill. It wasn't the Patriot Act. Was it something before that about they were going to have all this emergency sort of funding where in any city, if there was a dirty bomb, if there was something, whatever happened, where all of a sudden you had to relocate, 20,000-40,000 people because of could have been a dirty bomb, could have been a bio attack, could be anything, that cities would have the ability to do that. Remember, we had a couple of runs on that where buses, trains, where you would have thought, wouldn't you think, you would have thought that every city would have had the ability to transport and house 20, 30, 40,000 people, whether it was massive barracks in a closed army base in Rantoul or whatever it is where you took every railroad car and could bring people down there. It's only a few hours away. Or something like that would be somehow... And all that money got dispersed, Kevin. Now, whose pocket it all went, I don't know. And that's why when I was a Ute, did he say Ute? In the Chicago school system as a janitor, well, I was key personnel, right? Meaning I had all the keys. In virtually every one of the big schools, there was a fallout shelter. And I don't know if everybody remembers the, was it the yellow and black sign? And it would say how many people, and if there was, you know, a school that says fallout shelters, you know, capacity 70, I would open the door, stick my nosy nose in there, and sure enough, there's 70 cots, there's 70 blankets, there's 70 pillows, there's wafers for 70 people for 2 weeks. Wasn't that what fallout was supposed to be? Water for 2 weeks, medical stuff, diapers. I mean, you name it. It was the money, whether it was foolishly spent or not, you know, whatever was a good idea, not a good idea. The fact is, the government apportioned the money, and 20 years later, if that would have happened, the stuff was still there. I challenge anybody to try and find any dime of what this Patriot Act, now, which I'm coming forth to the last comment where we bring Russell in, is now a city has got, let's say we start with 25 busloads of migrants. Aren't we supposed to be set up to handle 20, 30, 40,000 people in a crisis mode, and now we've got three busloads and we don't know what to do? We're running like a chicken with our head cut off? I mean, where is this money? Where is this preparation?
First of all, it's not three busloads.
Well, but it started that way. But my point is, where is all the stuff we were supposed to spend in the Patriot Act, where if somebody would have had a hazmat thing where you had to evacuate, you know, four blocks to the west side, then we could put, you know, nobody wants to go stay in Rantoul for 3 days, but at least it's better than dying. I mean, where is all that money, Kevin? It's nowhere. Unless you can find it.
I have no expectation that the money's been well spent and that the preparations have been well done.
So should our goal for next year, us and the listeners, the next time something like this happens, somehow we get on the dole?
I think that the dole is the place to be.
Yeah. I just want to, if I ever come back in life, I want to come back as a trickler instead of trickle-y.
Don't touch that one. Nobody touch that one. Let's move on.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Just move forward. Everybody move forward quickly.
Yeah, if I was going to say family-friendly show, let's leave it alone.
Let's just move forward.
Of course, jumping back
I always lurk around for the moment that I should break in, and there it was.
Yep.
I can see
Russell driving down to Indianapolis, taking a little detour to the Bass Pro Shop and walking in there Saturday, on a Wednesday morning and seeing 30 people and go, bass boats around. I can see you doing that, Russell. You're a generous guy.
He would do that. Before I ditch out of here, I do want to jump back on the Cubs, as long as we're into that, you know, what you should or shouldn't say. And I will say this, that when I see the name Miles Mastroboni, I feel like somebody's always said a dirty word.
Yeah. Why do they like him better than Bodie? I don't get that.
Probably a better defender.
All right.
Because Bodie's not cheap. They had, you know, he had a guaranteed contract. So.
Well, they got to pay him in the minors.
Yeah. They paid him millions of dollars to play in the minors, and now they've cut him loose. So, yeah.
He's not back at AAA?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
I think they DFA'd him. Anyway, I'm going to leave it to you guys. So, you know, have fun. I'll put you on the stream. And,
hey, you might we might have a change in schedule. You might be on tomorrow and Lou Friday.
Yeah, that's what you're telling me. So just confirm it, and I'll be there.
All right, Russell. All right. Just as a start, when you listen to some of the, when I was talking to Kevin, some of the what seemed to be far out there policies that, you know, Harris came out with, helping people for small businesses and helping people for houses, is, I don't know if I agree with how she's going to do it, but it surely is an absolute extension of what you and I have been talking about, how 80% or 70% of the people have been left behind while the other people have all the money. Regular people can't buy a house, and then regular people
want
to start a business. Yeah. You can't do it. You don't have any money, and the bank won't give you the money. They'll say, do it on your credit card at 22% when everybody else is borrowing at 3%. I don't know that her solutions are the right ones, but it's at least a recognition that this is what we have sown, right?
Where we're at.
Yeah.
But that's not how that's not exactly how it's presented. You know, that policy's got us to where we're at.
Well, she's not going to say that.
Yeah, and that so it can be taken as an acknowledgement of that, but maybe only 3% of people are going to pick up on it that way.
Well, that's what they have us for, to point that out.
I know. Well, you know, and if you start to say things like that, they put you in a bad box.
Well, I mean, one of my clients the other day, and he was listening to the show. He was listening to last Wednesday's, because he was liking you, and he was saying that you guys were. I think we were talking about how, when you back in the day, there was one breadwinner, mostly the male, but not always, and the other person stayed at home, which, by the way, staying at home and taking care of kids and taking care of the house is a real job, maybe two or three jobs. It's not like it's an easy day.
And it's thankless.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well,
really, it is.
The kids don't say thank you all the time?
Oh, no.
No, no.
And I think our kids are you know, pretty good kids, but no, you know. Teenagers are like that.
Yeah, I remember
they're
being
there. Just like,
yeah. I remember it.
I just got past it about 3 years ago, so. I remember that too.
So, I mean, I think it was you. We were talking about how people used to have a, you know, whatever. Somebody come in and watch the kids or something like that, and it was the person going to work. Let's say it's the wife, made a lot more money than the person they had to pay for the kids. And I mean, I know the girls that worked at the we had the people who were in the marketing department at CBO. We happened to be three ladies. And they were terrific. And one of them said, you know, what do you suppose they were making in 1998? 50, 55, 60, something like that, Russell?
I have no idea.
A manager in marketing. You know, they were there a while. They were good people. They were writing stuff. Mm-hmm. And when they weren't schlumps, I'm going to say 60. And, you know, the one lady said to me, Joni, I think, she goes, you know, it cost me X for clothes, X for a train ticket, X for the extra car to get to the train, and I'm paying child support, and I'm basically netting 15 or 20, you know, when all is said and done. So then the government comes out and says, okay, well, these people, who's the guy who ran for, I keep forgetting the guy's name, who ran for president or senator or something, and found out that he didn't pay his child support lady Social Security or something, and it didn't actually have him on the payroll, or her on the payroll, and it was a big deal, and he ended up dropping
it. It was a domestic. It's like it was, you know, somebody that came in and cleaned their house or something like that, and they paid him cash.
And so now if you actually have somebody and you're paying them $25 an hour to watch your kids, or 30, and plus Social Security, plus all the other stuff that goes with it, I don't know that you're even breaking even, are you? If you're making 45...
That'll increase your labor costs very quickly.
And all of a sudden, I mean, I'm saying that person shouldn't get Social Security. I'm not going to go there. I'm saying all of a sudden now we have people that have to have two people working. Oh, by the way, if they do, they're not gaining very much. Except when it's become a real problem for a lot of people everywhere you look, and it's not.
And it's becoming a long term traffic problem too.
Yeah,
because you're having fewer kids.
Yeah, and I.
You do need a growing population to maintain a way of life. There are bigger problems around it than, you know, you don't have enough money. Go ahead. Go down the...
No, I was going to ask if you... I was coming in early, obviously. I just was hearing on BBM this new survey that came out this morning about generation whatever. And people in their 20s saying they don't really ever expect to have a kid because they're never going to be able to afford one. I don't think they'll ever be able to afford a house. I was wondering if you would happen to spot who actually did that research. I don't disagree with it at all. I wonder who did it.
No, I wouldn't. I did not see where that came from. I can dig it out during the break or something like that. But I can tell you that 50% of the children in my household say they're never going to have kids. So there, you got that one. Well, you know, and I think, and part of it is, and you know, it's the older one that she just got picked to go. I can't believe I was able to work this in the first 5 minutes. She just got a new gig as a columnist for a publication. And
oh, good for her.
It hasn't been. I know she's 19, and now she's got a full time job as a columnist.
Wow, I love it.
They're sending her to a conference in Europe in October, and that's the kind of stuff that she wants to do with her life. So that's why she doesn't want to. It's not an affordability thing with her. It's more of a she sees that, you know, she just wants to focus on her profession. Now that may change in 10 or 15 years. But the affordability thing, it has a long-term negative demographic impact.
Well, how
you do need, especially when you've got a society where people that are retired are, you know, supposedly Social Security is, I put my money in there and then I get to take it out when I'm 70 or 75 or whatever it'll be when I reach the age. You're supposedly depositing your own money, but in reality, you know, I'm putting money in there, and you know, my dad's getting a check out of there, and that kind of the same dollars.
I heard it described, Russell, and we agree with this or not. This was a University of Chicago description. Social Security is billed as an insurance policy. But it's never been set up that way. It's actually a tax and a welfare system, and they never matched.
That really is what it is, even though, you know, they tell you that that's your money that's being put in. But the issue with that is one of the, much like any, this is going to be great, much like any pyramid scheme, you need to have more people putting money in than are taking money out. And if we make it so difficult, or you know, if it's just unaffordable to have a family in this day and age, which it kind of is, who's you know, the only way that you're going to be able to maintain something like that is through smart immigration, not immigration, but smart immigration, and that's why I'm all over. Somebody comes into this country, that's great, but they should already have a job lined up when they get here.
Well, you remember
straightforward. It's not that difficult.
You remember Bill Florsch? He was vice chairman of Cboe for a long time. You remember him? Anyway,
yeah.
Bill's a terrific guy. We were on one of the board things. He was vice chairman. I was on the board. And he says, "You know, Tom, if all of our parents waited till the right time to have us, none of us would be here." I mean, it's probably the truth, but take what you're just saying to the extreme. And when I say, I don't know if it's the extreme, but the extreme that I've ever seen. Take Japan, for instance. Not only...
They got issues.
But not only, this is, you know, I know it's a family show, but not only are they not having enough kids, I don't know if it's because they're squashed into cars and this and that and everybody is so close together. I'm not a psychologist. Their sales of like condoms are way down. They don't even want to have sex anymore.
They're not even having sex.
Yeah.
No, and I think that doesn't hold true just for them. Unfortunately, and again, it's a family show, but the access to stimulative materials. It's resulted in a behavior change that does not result in pregnancy.
You're not, are you one of the group?
Boy, that was good.
Well, are you one of the
thing I just said would not get me in trouble.
are you, well, you know, there's, I mean, you don't hear about this once in a while. somebody sends me something that for somehow or another, some people are blaming it on plastics and the water bottles and things like that, that the average male today doesn't have near as much testosterone as your dad did. And that the sperm count...
I can totally see that.
And the sperm count of an average 30-year-old today is like half of what it was in the 20s. How you can figure that out when a guy's dead. But I wonder if that's part of it. I don't know what it is, but it's...
Lots of environmental factors. But
let's get back to the first question. Now, Japan has... we're up to 1.25 of the GDP in debt. Japan's been over 2 for a while. Now, if we're having problems with the birth rate dropping a little bit, theirs is ridiculously low to the point where, you know, go out 200 years, you're not going to be anybody there. I mean, it's not that bad, but it's close. How the hell are they going to try and right that ship debt-wise if there's nobody there? Nobody's a strong term, but, I mean, you know what I'm saying.
They're not. They'll eventually implode.
Well, would it be simple and say, okay, everybody gets paid 80% of what?
What's funny is, there are really no like minimum wage laws or anything like that in China, and China's the one that's now that's got the demographic problems that Japan has. It's earlier for China than Japan. And what they are doing is companies will suddenly say, okay, you're making 60, 70, 80% of what you made before. And because there's not, I know it sounds kind of strange because you'd think a communist country would have, would have their thumb on the scale on everything that's going on. But they have allowed the business community to be kind of like the Wild West. And then when they make a lot of money, they come in, regulate them, and take the money away from them. But that's kind of their version of communism, that the government part is communist, but they're trying to allow very free markets. And I'd say very free markets, maybe even freer than here to a certain point, especially with the management labor type situation. Because they're just they can scale pay up and down based on supply and demand to an extreme point, and that's what's going on over there. Whereas in Japan, I don't think you had the ability to lower people's pay, but it's just stayed the same forever, and it stayed the same. The prices stayed the same forever to a point where prices were associated with certain products.
Well, our cub reporter,
like Diet Coke had been, $2 20 years. Could you imagine going to Wrigley Field and the beer still the same cost as it was last year, let alone 20 years ago?
Well, it's our cub reporter Jan Lee.
That's how things have worked in Japan. There, the prices haven't gone up. Everybody's had an okay, They've had an okay, lifestyle. It's a very modern country. You don't have huge issues over there. You don't have protests, calm protests that erupt into buildings getting burned down and stuff like that. And maybe that has to do with them all being Japanese and them not allowing them. They really don't allow immigration. There, China doesn't allow you to immigrate there either, and so
I thought there were countries. I thought there were spots on, and there's a couple of. If you get like the see an ARP magazine, the retired thing, or for old people or whatever, they'll.
I just hit that age, and I didn't sign up for it.
Well, they will give you the spots where all these people are moving and living. Uh-huh. I say all these people from the U.S. They have Social Security and maybe a nest egg, and number one is like Portugal. They love Portugal. There's a place, Costa Rica, but there's actually a spot on the coast of Japan. It might just be one spot that people are going. It's not a big city, really.
And this is me just throwing this out there. I wonder if it's near one of our bases.
Maybe.
If there's enough American stuff there that you'd be okay, because. generally, you know, the when you hear about that, it's a space. It's a. I have a buddy who he's now in Thailand, but he had he sold his software company and retired to Hong Kong and married a girl from there. And the neighborhood that he lived in Hong Kong, two doors down was somebody that used to live on my block in Hinsdale. There were a ton of, it was just an area of Hong Kong where it was all expats. Hong Kong's expensive and not exactly where you want to retire. And being the genius that Bob is, he sold his software firm about 2 years ago and bought a marijuana farm, and now he's in Thailand. So that's where you'll find me when I here.
I don't. You know, you're more like me than you think. You want to be near your family and near your friends.
Oh yeah, I guess.
So your
Zoom calls are for.
So your daughter is in the. I'm not picking on her. I love her, but. You remember when you were young, right? And you dated girls that were like 24 and 25. Then you dated them when they were 30. How quickly that changes. God. In fact, I dated a 30-year-old, and she was like, oh, no, I'm not like that at all. And, well, I don't know if she saw the movie My Cousin Vinny, where Marissa Tomei's stamping her foot. I've got it. What'd she say? It's my clock is ticking or something.
Biological
like
clock is ticking.
God, that was one of the hottest scenes. Anyway, I loved her. I mean, let's just say people change.
And you know, that movie gave hope to all of us that look like Joe Pesci.
Yeah, oh yeah, without a doubt. I loved it when he was in the suit and ended up in the red mud. He had the.
You know, having grown up in the, you know, my mama was from South Alabama. That part of the country, and then moved north. I love it. Leave it at that.
Got it.
There's some accuracy there. So demographics.
Yeah, how do you fight that battle?
If Marissa Tomei could not get somebody to impregnate her, we got problems, right?
Oh yeah, it's a.
But we do, and we do have demographic issues. The way that you solve that, one of the, you try to encourage people to have babies, which you can encourage people to move to a new town or, you know, change professions, but encouraging people to have babies to fix the demographic situation is pretty difficult, to say the least.
Well, what we got to go to break here in a couple of minutes, but
yeah,
there's a difference in. I don't know. It's sort of the difference in mentality, and we're from the kind of the same generation. But there are people who are saying I can't afford the $75,000 a year to send my three kids to Harvard, so I better not have any kids. Then there's other people. I mean, the people that Kevin works with that every year are just doing a little better, and they're not going to Harvard, but you know what? They're doing fine, and doing better like every year. I mean. The kid who was on, even Andrew, you don't want to talk about him when he's here, but the kid who does a show on Tuesday and Friday, Ricardo.
Uh-huh.
The kid, he's from Guatemala. He's just finishing up his associate's degree. I think where he's going to school, Andrew, you might know more about this than me, where he's going to school, how's this happening, Russell? It's not turning into a 4-year school necessarily on its own. But they're allowing professors from DePaul, Northwestern, and I don't know somewhere else, maybe Loyola, to come on over where he can stay there at junior college rates and get enough credits to where he gets a 4-year degree from someplace. I don't have the whole detail. And, and the kid works two jobs. He comes here. He's always on time. He's happy as can be. The nicest kids I've ever met. I mean, and he thinks the world's his oyster. It's just going to get nothing but better for him. I mean, I'm going to guess if he finds a nice girl, he's not going to be problem having any kids. I mean, some of it's kind of where you look. I'm not saying everybody needs to be from Guatemala or whatever, but the fact is, his view of life is nowhere near as dour as other people's. And the kid's busting his ass. And he's happy he's going to be. I mean, it's, you know, he loves coming in. He loves learning. He goes, I never even heard what you guys are talking about. I can't wait to get here. I'm like, okay.
And you know what? And that's the majority. And you know, we don't dig too much into exactly what I do for Kelly, but I'm heavily involved in the Indianapolis campus with the undergrads. And, you know, IU Indianapolis is a lot of first-generation college students. They're not camping out and protesting and everything. They're working two jobs and going to college. And there are a lot of them out there. You know, the average college student is not the one that you see, you know, living in a tent and wearing Palestinian stuff in the quad at a school. Them are just trying in. You know, we had encampments both at the Indianapolis and the Bloomington campus, and you would have undergrads that would quietly say they just thought the whole thing was ridiculous, but they would never say it out loud. And that, and you know, there are a lot of undergrads that I've got a handful that are like the kid that you're talking about right now, and they probably will, you know, get to the middle class point and probably think about having kids and moving forward in life like that. They're going to have to be a two-income household to do it.
Probably.
The thing is, they don't know any better.
Well,
my mom worked. My mom was not my family was a two-income household. Both my parents worked the whole time that I hell until actually my dad retired a week before he died.
Really?
Oh yeah, he retired at 83, and then it died the next week.
Well, you know, the only thing I'll say about we've got a break here, and I don't want to get involved. I don't really have as the sum of the demonstrations and who did them and what. I may have a problem with that. What I don't have a problem with, Russell, is young people seeing an awful lot of people dying and think it's really a bad idea. Whatever side you happen to be on or whatever, and the idea that somehow these people did what they did in Israel, which is pretty horrific, and then since then Israelis seem to be on, you know, a something that they, you know, I don't know, maybe the Hamas, you can't deal with them, I don't, it's probably true, but the fact that you just keep knocking off people after people day after day, I think a lot of young people and a lot of old people, like maybe me, are really sitting there going, guys, there's got to be another way. I mean, than seeing this every day. I mean, the fact that people have empathy for people that are in worse shape than them, I don't really have a problem with that. Now, if you do something really stupid because of it, then, well, yeah, I got a problem with that. But the fact is, there's a lot of bad crap going on over there. And for somebody to not say, hey, somebody stop it, I'm not so sure that that's...
No, it's not about, but saying stop it and push, you know, push all the Jews into the ocean. And,
oh,
and,
no. You know.
And that's what they're chanting, and it's things like that.
It's not stop
killing our guys. It's, you know, we think we should kill all of you guys. And that's a completely different protest, but that's what they're saying.
But, I mean, the Vietnam stuff got out of control in a lot of ways, but by the same token, the more you read about guys like McNamara and body counts and all that other stuff, geez, I can't believe that was. I thought I was up on most of it. There was stuff going on that was worse than I knew of. I mean the government was an absolute disaster during those years in this place. So it turns out the people who were demonstrating were pretty spot on. I'm not saying these people are, but I'm saying, God bless. I mean, the more you hear about it, and you see the toll of people that came back from there. I mean, these are people of my age, or, you know, a little older than me, but still. Anyway,
I know two or three of them, and
it was pretty awful. SP Futures down 26, and as they do down 94. We come back, Russell, let's talk a little about last week's sell-off, a little bit of bounce here, the debate. Some guy was on the other day, and he was, no, I'm sure he must have done it properly or he wouldn't have come on TV. Well, he said that there's all this idea that one party is better for the market than the other.
That's not true.
And he said something about, in the first, it was 900 and some days that Biden had been in office and the market was up whatever percent, and at 900 and some exact number of days in Trump was office, it was up the exact same amount. I would never have thought to do that calculation, but I'm assuming the guy's close to being right. S&P futures down 27. NASDAQ futures down 98. Right back. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here. What it is.
Well, and we'll pick Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Andrew on the board. SP futures down 21, NASDAQ futures down 70. We have to talk about now is the CPI, which is a big number today.
CPI came out.
Yeah, CPI. Yeah. It's a 0.2. I guess that's right where it was supposed to be. The year over year is 3.2. Well, core over year over year is 3.2 versus 3.2. So this is kind of a right on the number type of thing here. So I'm not so sure that matters much for the market. But let's do some quick market stuff, and then we'll be right back to Russell. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 83.5%, FTSE up 10.1%, CAC around up 19.3%, so mildly bullish over there. Asia, which has been getting clobbered, is clobbered again today. Nikkei down 539, 35,000, that's 1.5%. Hang Seng down 125, 17,108, danger of going below 17,000. Shanghai down 22, 27, 21. Those are the guys that absolutely can't get out of their own way at all, and I'm sure Russell will have a comment on that. Yesterday, we had a second day of somewhat of a rally. Dow was down 92, but S&P was up 24, which is 0.5%, and the NASDAQ was up 141, that was 0.8%. So today we have, this number came out, bonds are up 4 basis points, 10-year rate is up 4 basis points to 3.68, the Bund unchanged 2.14, Japan unchanged at 0.86. Oil, which has been really low, it's up $1.44 today, but still only to 67.23. Rejoicing when you go to the gas station these days. Brent up $1.40, 70.99. Natural gas up 4 cents, 2.27. Gold up 3.50, 25.46. Silver up 46 cents, 29.08. Copper up 5 cents, 4.15. Foreign exchange, not much of a change. The euro is 1.10. British pound 130.5. Say. And the Japanese yen 142. Bitcoin down $1,100, 56,669. Andrew, how about an abbreviated traffic weather sports? It's nice out, and we'll get back to this number.
All right, yeah, sounds good. Starting off a little bit of sports, as I mentioned earlier, the Cubs won over the Dodgers 6-3. Diamondbacks won over the Rangers 6-0. And the White Sox lost to the Guardians 5-0. For Chicago weather, it's currently 59 degrees. It's going to be warming up a lot today. We're going to have a high of 84. We're going to have plenty of sunshine, and a little bit of wildfire smoke will cause the sky to be hazy. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 82 degrees. They're definitely warming up to about 109. So expect some sunshine and some pretty dangerous weather out there if you're not prepared for the hot. Other than that, it is a little bit of business as usual on the inbound expressways. No major accidents to report. If you're on the outbound, expect some delays on the Eisenhower and the Kennedy. That's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
So how could you not be prepared for the hot weather in Phoenix when you're pushing 110 days in a row over 100, Russell? And how will you not move by
mean,
now?
How could you not be prepared for it if you live there?
Well, maybe your air conditioner is giving it up after 110 days.
You just know it. My wife hates heat. That's one of the we kick around. Where are we going to end up if with all the kids out of the house, et cetera, and me kind of having flexibility as to where I can live and work because I could switch universities, although I never really want to switch universities, but we do kick that kind of stuff around. And Arizona has a big X on it because of the heat. If we took out a map of the United States, there's big X's on about half the states for different reasons.
What do you think of my idea of getting like a real nice 12 flat down the block from a couple of restaurants and a couple bars in the Isle of Man, and then we do we do 6 weeks in spring training in Arizona when it's nice, maybe yep. eight to 12 weeks in Siena or someplace in Italy in the fall, maybe a couple of weeks out in a ski place, even though we don't want to go skiing, we just watch everybody.
I'm a big fan of getting a book and sitting by the fire at the ski lodge.
I'll
do that if everybody else wants to go ski all day long.
Well, you know, Kevin was mentioning earlier that the movers and shakers in the world now go to this Davos thing. Maybe next year we should set our sights, getting our fannies over to Davos, just sitting at the bar and seeing who sits next to us and pick their brain. Who knows what we might learn?
Could you imagine? I don't even think you can get that close. But could you just imagine being a fly on the wall at the lobby bar at Davos?
I got news for you. If you can get me in the place, I'll get us in the bar. I've never been turned
down
yet.
Have you ever been to a Final Four?
No, but...
I've been to a Final Four before, and there's a coach's hotel.
Really?
And, basically, it's just a hotel where... I don't know if the NCAA... You know, every head coach gets, like, two tickets, and I don't know. I don't know what the deal is, but I know that all the coaches and all the assistant coaches, all the teams... can stay at the same hotel, and I just happened to stay at the same hotel. It was a bunch of assistant coaches looking for maybe a better program or what. They're just mulling around the lobby the whole time.
And hence the name lobbyist.
Just a picture instead of that, you've got every central bank president and everything else mulling around the lobby.
Have you ever?
That's what I picture is the same situation, but people that control the world instead of people that control 18 to 22 year old basketball players.
Now,
and they don't even control them anymore.
Can you imagine me not being able to get into the bar?
I cannot imagine that. I think that this would be your mea culpa. This would be it. If you can get us into the bar at Davos, I would say that should be your mic drop moment, and you should be retiring to Belize or something.
Well, all you got to do is be nice to people. All you got to do is talk to the bartenders, leave a nice tip, and guess what? They love you.
They do like, yeah. You're more likable than I am.
All right, so what are we doing about the CPI number?
Well, CPI, the big, I was looking at the breakdown part of it, and the most expensive things were, I think, transportation and housing. I think transportation was up like almost 8%. Which everybody does seem to be traveling a lot more than they used to. I think there's some pent up demand around that one.
Let me ask you a procedural question.
It was like almost 8%. Transportation's up 7.9%, shelter's up 5.2%, and food away from home is up 4%. Though that shelter and transportation, you can kind of get away with. Because new cars and used cars actually went negative last month. Food at home was up only 0.9%, but food away from home was up 4%.
So in the last year, booze away from home has to be up 10%.
Easily.
Yeah. Let me ask you.
I had a burger and a couple of Diet Cokes at your favorite place, and I think it was almost $30 recently.
Yeah. What... In terms of the housing piece, let's just pick that one out. Let me find it here. I'll find it. You already found it, but I'll find it. Education, alcoholic beverages. Let's see, where the hell's...
Woo-hoo.
Anyway, oh, there we go, shelter. For the last 3-4 years, we've had... who are the guys? Kay Schiller? Comes out with, like, the rents and so forth. And the one year, they said rents were up, like, 20% or some huge number. It was, like, the year coming out of COVID. And these guys had it at like, they got rent of primary residence. They got up 5%. But now the question is, if the number is really 40, and these guys, since the start of COVID, have it in total up, let's say, 20 or 21, is the other 20 going to percolate its way through over the next few years as a lagging indicator, or is it somehow just never going to catch up? I mean, I don't know the answer to that.
You'd think at some point there would be some balance, but it just seems like the diversion's just going to keep going.
Reason why
it just feels like every trend that's in place, and there are a whole lot of negative ones around us, it just looks like they're going to continue, and there's very little that can be done about it.
I have a
The demographics are bad. I have a hard time believing that we've conquered inflation. I really do. I'm almost to the conspiracy point where I feel like they want us to believe that inflation is under control until after November. Well, and then we're going to get a second round of that one.
Well, I think I did this one day. I've bored you with this before. I think it's probably before COVID I did this. I did from 2000 to 2020. And I think the, whatever the CPI was, it was, I don't know, I'll find it here real quick. But the, and I took three things as quick as I could do at my computer at home. And I say quick, I mean sort of half-assed. I'm trying to be as rigorous as possible. But if I had somebody who was, grading me like a professor like you, it might not have been an A paper, but for somebody just hacking around, it was pretty good. I looked at healthcare, I looked at college tuition, and I looked at secondary tuition, which is somewhat hard to do. But I did. Mm-hmm. Let me give you the motivation. I'm trying to get the CPI here real quick. That's why I'm stumbling along. From January 2000 to January 2020, stuff is up 150%, according to these guys. So mm-hmm. I went and looked at hospital insurance, and I was able to get some records from PTI. But basically, if you go online, say give a historical percentage of what companies pay for insurance for their employees, it's kind of on there. Now, it's sort of a cheating number, which I'd have to put in my paper if I was writing it for you. I think over that 20 years, what the companies have paid has not included the fact that some companies, to defray the expenses, have increased the deductible and the copay. So the policy is probably not quite as inclusive it was in 2000 as it was in 2020. It wasn't not as inclusive in 20 as it was in 2000. Anyway, I came up with a number. It was up 2.8 times or three times, not the 150. So essentially mm-hmm. double what CPI said it was. Now, and I also went to college tuitions, and there's a site, Russell, see if you have access to this, being a professor. Mm-hmm. There's a site where every single college, I've never seen a site this good, every single college, we're talking to the junior colleges in Illinois, Richard mm-hmm. J. Daley College, tuition going back to 2000, room and board, and out of state if there was some, that kind of thing. It was an unbelievable site. So I took like 10 schools, virtually the same number, 2.85 to 3, so double the CPI rate. And then I looked at, how do you find out what primary stuff is? I mean, I guess I could have taken, Mount Carmel or St. Ignatius, but instead I said, I think when the Russells get their tax bill, what's it, about 50% for schools? Something like that? When you mm-hmm. guys get your property tax bill. So I just looked at...
Oh, easily.
So I did this. I wasn't about to get the taxes in Idaho because I could ask Hal, I guess. But I just looked at Illinois. And property taxes are up roughly three times since 2020. So in all three of those spots that are big ticket items, hospitalization, education, they're essentially double the CPI. Now, my question is, and then our buddy Greg Pappas sent me this thing yesterday from a guy named Charlie Bellello. that went through, and he's got
He does great work.
Okay, but he sent this. I'm checking my work in 1999, which is the closest year to 2000. He has U.S. family health insurance premium is $6,000. 2020, he's got it $21,000. So let's say in 2000 it was $7,000. He's got the exact name numbers I do, so I wasn't so bad. And now he's got it at $24,000 a year. So in the last 24 years, it's up 6 times. And I'm going to say, if you took the 24 years in the CPI, it's probably, even with the stuff going on in COVID, it's probably, let me change the date here to 2024. And see what these guys say. I mean, I guess my question to you, Professor, if you go all the way to 2024, the number is 1.86. And he's got it 6 times. So it's 3 times higher. Now, are these bleeps ever going to catch up, or are they going to continue to think that it's what they got here is what they got? I mean, how do you not catch up ever? Doesn't somebody ever reflect, gee, it looks to me like we got it doubling in 24 years and it's up 6 times. We got to do something. How does that even work out?
Well, eventually it just, I feel like eventually it just kind of falls apart. Or really what's going to happen is our way of life's just going to diminish. You know what I mean? Over time, it's going to diminish. There's just no other way to put it.
How many
you're going to need to live in had an apartment down in Indiana off and on, just depending on my teaching load. And the apartment that I used to have this time last year is 40% higher if I wanted to go get the same apartment now. It's jacked itself up that much. So let's say, and it was a hole. Oh my God, it was a terrible place. So there's really not much of a step down alternative for me.
Did you have any roaches?
I had a neighbor that got, I had a neighbor, a couple that lived on my floor that both of them got bit by a bat in the middle of the night in their apartment.
Did they catch the rat, or did they have to get the rabbit bat?
Bat.
I mean, they catch
flying
the bat.
Around bat.
They didn't have to give. They didn't get rabies shots.
They did.
Oh God.
We're talking about not a quality building here. It was built in 1890. It actually used to be an insane asylum, so the place was haunted like crazy too. So I can pick them, can I?
Yeah.
There's not a palatable, cheaper alternative for me. That was really the most bare bones that I was going to go. And I mean, all I did was go sleep there and then left. I could have cared less what it was. I would not have rented that place with my wife and kids in a million years. Like I said, the rent's gone up about 40%. And I only check on that one just to get an idea of reality versus the numbers that the government's throwing at us. But let's just say that, you know, I'm part of the renting class, which I do think that there's a lot of people in the United States who really are probably better off just renting as opposed to trying to buy a place and go through, you know, all the maintenance and everything else on their own. It just doesn't make a whole ton of sense. So if you know, if you're in within that group, what you end up doing is if you can't afford to stay in the place that you're staying in, you actually take it down a step, and your quality of life starts to suffer. And that's what I think is going to be the long term repercussions.
Well, how many people do you know now that are putting off health stuff because they can't afford it? I know a lot of people.
I don't know if anybody's brought that specifically up to me.
I don't mean
you said it, and in the next couple of weeks, somebody, you know, it's one of those things where you hear a new word, and then all of a sudden you're going to hear about it from someone.
Well, you know, there's a place out by Audrey, when you mentioned that, you know, Orland is obviously very developed, but there's still remnants of kind of when it wasn't, right? And the road that goes right by her place is actually U.S. 7, or State Road 7, that goes to Joliet. Goes right by the prison, actually. Anyway, they got one of those old kind of motels out there. I mean, the real old ones.
Yeah.
Should we embarrass Andrew? Andrew, what's the difference between a hotel and a motel?
If I understand right, a motel is outside.
The doors open out. Good for you.
Yeah, there we go.
So this is one of those...
You can drive up to your door.
Yeah. So this is one of those, you know, where like the 25 rooms are strung out all next to each other. And I wonder if they still have the quarter you could throw in the bed and it goes, remember those things?
I haven't had a massaging bed in weeks.
Well, I mean, when was the last time you saw one of those?
I do recall what you're talking about.
God, those things were disgusting. Anyway, this thing is, there's never a vacancy there. And I said, who the hell's staying here? She goes, a lot of the people, they just put up these new, there's two or three of these new healthcare facilities. Loyola's got one out there, Silver mm-hmm. Cross, University of Chicago. She goes, a lot of like the nurses and people and doctors that have moved here and haven't found a place to live yet are staying here. You know, for whatever it is, $50 a night or something.
I can see that.
It's not like, you know, people are traveling on Route 7 and piling in there. She goes, yeah, you can't get in the place. I mean, you're kidding. You know, we're talking about, you know, those things were not exactly, the Ritz-Carlton. I mean, but, you know.
But they're, you know, if you're working at, the thing is, if you're working at a large hospital or something like that, or even a smaller hospital, and having to... And you're living in a place like that, there's probably everything else that you need life-wise at the hospital.
Or maybe
you
still have
at the cafeteria 2-3 times a day, and, you know.
Well, maybe you still have your house, you know, you have the family in Arlington Heights or someplace, and you're looking for a place, and so as you find one, the family's moving down there, and you're moving in.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, yeah, but I think if we never, as I watched some of the debate last night, I'm concerned. I see a little bit on the Harris side that they are at least recognizing where the problems are with where the prices are and where people's salaries are. Now, I don't like what their fixes are, but Russell, if it was you, I mean, right now we in order to quote fix this thing, if you got money, you don't think there's a fix that's needed. Should we have programs like that to help people? My problem with the programs is the money never gets to the people it's supposed to go to. I want to be one of the people in the middle of my finger in the pie, right? But I'm never going to be one of those people. So if we decide to spend $30 billion on a program, we only know that 10 maybe is getting to the people who deserve it.
Yep. We've got 2 minutes, and you're going to... Let me try to meander through a very difficult topic in a couple of minutes.
I'm good at that.
Well, okay. You know, when we get the monthly employment number, they talk about, this 3-4% or so being considered full employment because of people in transition from one job to another, et cetera. You can't tell me, and that's a holdover from... using the one ads to try and find a job. Go by the Tribune, you see if there are any new help wanted ads in there, you try to be the first person there and get that job. You know, and there was, you know, going from one job to another was could be a very cumbersome process. We have the technology in place that I don't really know why this would be a situation, but I'll have to use myself here. What if I've decided I don't want to be at Indiana anymore, and there's a university somewhere within the Chicago area that I could step in and start teaching finance at pretty quickly. Me finding that position is real easy compared to how it used to be, and you can seamlessly transfer from one job to another. So I feel like if the government really wants to try to help, coming up with some sort of employment clearinghouse that more efficiently matches up people with jobs. You know, you got somebody that's got a particular skill, and you match them up somewhere else, and if them working 100 miles away from where they are, part of their compensation is housing at the old Motel 6, like you just talked about. We could be more efficient with the way that we cap our labor market compared to the way that we've been in the past. And, you know, that I feel like that's the kind of stuff that maybe the government should be trying to do, is match up people's talents with people in the private sector, as opposed to saying, well, we're going to give you 25 grand toward a down payment on a house. Don't do that. Find somebody a good, solid job that's going to, you know, maybe make them comfortable for the next 30 or 40 years and allow them to afford the house.
No, you don't think we want to do something stupid like take a Tilden Tech, for instance, and actually have the mechanics, the carpentry, and all that other stuff
exactly
in there with somebody.
And you can even take it to a training point where if you have, if you're monitoring who's looking for a job, and you only get your unemployment check if you're in this clearinghouse of talent.
I would agree.
By being able to go through that, you might be able to see, okay, very quickly, there's a shortage of guys that know how to use a drill.
Yeah.
So, if you come in and do this 6-week intensive course on how to do this, we've got a job for you.
Well, how many businesses?
And that is a much better way to spend a few thousand bucks of government money. You know, putting somebody in a place where they become productive, and then they basically, we've already heard Kamala using the phrase, the return on investment in some of these things. We talked about would have a return on investment. Giving somebody $25,000 to buy a house, that's not going to give you a return on the investment.
Well,
if you want the government to create things that's going to do a return on investment, you got to show me where that money is going to, you know, how it's going to help society, but also how if the government spends money and she's saying there's going to be a return on the investment, the government should be getting back more than they spent on whatever they're doing.
I would 100% agree with that, although I'll leave you with this one, and we'll talk about it maybe next week. Andrew, write this down. You've got two layers of the chessboard here, okay?
Yeah.
You keep using Tilden Tech because my cousin went there. If they had a welding school like they used to, if they had all those other kinds of stuff, it would be one hell of a lot easier for my nephew who works at this machine shop place where they do replacement parts for a lot of big places. And they have, you know, the grinders and all the other stuff. They are not big enough, at least maybe they should be, but their chairman is not smart enough. Doesn't want to do it. I'm sure he's real smart, but they're not big enough or don't have an idea about having a training program. Now at Pullman, if you had anything, it was big enough where they had a training program. They not only wanted you to learn how to weld, they wanted you to learn how to weld their way, you know, so and know how to do it properly. So I think there's two things here. Should somebody in high school now or not that wants to be able to go to a Tilden Tech or where Kevin is at Arby Tech, or Moraine Valley or someplace, should you be able to get these certificates that I know how to do brakes on a car, I know how to do this and that and the other? The answer is yes. Now, that person is going to get a salary, I'm thinking of, you know, 65, 70, maybe more, maybe 80, probably more, if they're good at it. But then question number two is, the governmental crap with the dollars, that person can afford a $300,000 house, which they were 3 years ago, not the $400,000. Now, the question is, do you try and give him help to be able to jump to the $400,000, or do you pull the money supply back a little bit and have some of these prices come down a little bit with all all the problems that might be associated with that, which, you know, now all of a sudden people are losing money because their houses are going down. But now,
well, can't we just make them flat?
Well, now what you're saying and what I believe, actually, you know what, Russell? Carl and I have this argument every week. He thinks that there's no chance. Well, you and I are saying, let's go from the ground up. Let's keep the money supply flat for a while so the prices don't go up or maybe drop a percent or two, something that crazy, and have people catch up. I don't know if we could pull that one off. And we wouldn't call it a soft landing. I don't know what a soft landing is anymore. Maybe we could pull it off, but I'll say this, Russell. I think it's worth a try. I think it's worth a try. What would you give us our chance of success?
Better than not doing anything.
You think there's a half a chance we pull it off that 3 or 4 years from now, people that are making 80 are now making 100 and the price of the houses stay the same? I'd love to see that happen.
The only way you can do that is to plop a whole bunch of houses out there very, very quickly.
Well, I'm going to disagree with that 100%. I'm going to disagree with that.
You increase the supply.
Okay, but now that's.
But then
it sounds like I'm talking to an economist.
But then, you know, what about the price of all those materials that everybody has to buy to build those houses?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I know.
I mean, I'm going to say the $400,000.
I was given the easy solution, and then the reality of what would happen.
You're given the economic solution.
And even Elon Musk, he tweeted at Kamala. He said, if you give everybody $25,000 to buy a house, the price of all the houses are going to go up by $25,000.
Well, that's what I'm getting. These people don't understand.
That was great. Yeah.
They don't understand economics, but they do understand there's a problem. Let me ask you a question. I still like dabbling in some construction and stuff, and I have people that, in fact, I just got these guys a job in a building in some place, and they're doing a really good job of putting a guy's deck in. I don't get paid for any of this stuff. I just match people up because I love it. I like people being able to make money and do stuff. But if you, let's say, your house, I mean, I'll pick a number. I'm going to say it's worth half a mil. Now, you may say, it's worth 650 or something. Whatever. If it's worth half a mil on the market, even with the price inflated from where it was 5 years ago, do you think you could build it today for 500?
Oh, probably not. No.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I don't think if we had this lot and we're going to build exactly what I'm sitting in right now, no, I don't think so.
You know, Edmund showed me this house where it was gorgeous. This guy was a builder that built the place.
We actually live in the builder's house.
Okay, this guy, they had this huge lot, and they had a pool. They had everything. He was looking for $1.2 million, and Audrey said, "Well, you know, there's not a whole lot of people around that can pay $1.2 million." I'm going, I don't have $1.2 million to plunk on a house down, but I'm going, God, you can't touch this place for less than $1.6 million. Good Lord, what's a pool now? $150 million, just for the pool at least.
Yeah, I one of our neighbors looked into it and was like, "You got to be kidding me."
Yeah. All right, so the number today, it's a 9. We're S&P futures are down 3, NASDAQ futures up 27. Sell off last week, a little bit of a bounce this week. Does the bounce go all the way? Does it go 2/3 like Fibonacci? Does it fall apart? What do you think?
It's going to go all the way back, and then we'll get another bad employment number, and we'll sell off, and we'll just keep repeating the pattern.
Oh, good.
Well, I'm kind of half kidding. I think we just kind of stall out for a little while right now. At least until next Wednesday when the Fed talks to us.
I think Trump's going to be clamoring for another debate.
I didn't watch it. I just read a couple of things about it. I'm glad I didn't watch it because I got a good night's sleep.
I actually dozed in the last half hour, but then I woke up just in the right spot of the Cub game.
Oh, good for you.
So there.
Good for you.
I think I fell asleep on a part where they were talking about the Venezuelans boiling the dogs.
Oh, for God's sake!
Yeah, I don't know how got on there, but
I don't want to think about that.
Oh, God. By the way, you still have the Frenchie?
We do, but it's looking like somebody might be adopting her.
One of the ladies to Audrey.
And the adoption is occurring because Mary Beth, my wife, was sitting out on the front porch, and a family was walking by with another Frenchie, and she ran out and accosted them and said, "You need another one."
Really?
Yes. So I think the dog will be in the neighborhood.
Well, they're not like basset hounds, are they? If you don't have two, they howl while you're gone.
No, not that. But you put two French bulldogs together, and it's like putting a couple of 13-year-old boys together with too much sugar.
Oh, they're feisty.
They're just crazy together, but it's fun crazy.
Oh, God. Well, good luck with that. I'll talk at you next Thank week. You. SP Futures down 4. Think the Bears have any chance against the Texans?
Of course they do. Bears are going all.
Oh, God. NASDAQ Futures up 30. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.